today, more records broken as markets swing positive for now. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one of the latest posts covering finance and property news. Well, this is our weekly market update, a data packed show where we start in the US, cross to Europe and Asia, and then in Australia, covering crypto and commodities along the way. The wild ride on the markets continued this week, with the S&P 500 and the Dow scoring record closing highs on Friday, thanks to big boosts from financial stocks after banks reported strong quarterly results, despite the fact that the latest inflation data fueled expectations of a smaller US Federal Reserve cut in November. Traders kept bets steady for a roughly 88% probability that the Fed will cut rates by 25 basis points at its November meeting, and just a 12% chance it will leave rates unchanged. A slower pace of interest rate cuts potentially presents pressure on Wall Street, given that US stock valuations scaled record highs on expectations of a sharp reduction in those rates. Major financial companies kicked off earnings seasons this week with upbeat comments from their top executives that should further ease investor worries that elevated borrowing costs were weighing on consumers and pushing the economy to the cusp of a downturn. JP Morgan hiked provisions for soured loans, but still finished the session up 4.4% after the lender reported higher than expected third quarter profit and raised its annual interest income forecast as it posted surprise net interest income gains from the bank's Wall Street operations, with investment banking fees surging 31%. Shares in Wells Fargo rallied 5.6% after its profit also beat analysts' expectations as a surge in investment banking fees helped counter a dip in lending revenue as interest rates fell. The bank reported debt card purchase volumes and transactions were up nearly 2% year on year, while credit card point of sale volumes were up 10%. More than decade-high credit card delinquencies had also stoked fears earlier this year that Americans were becoming overstretched, but that picture improved in the second quarter, according to the Federal Reserve Bank of Philadelphia. Impaired borrowing between 1 month and longer horizons marked its biggest retreat in 3 years, although it still was premature to declare a turning point for credit performance, the Fed said. BlackRock stock gains 3.6% after the asset manager reported that his assets under management had hit a record high for the third straight quarter. BlackRock pulled in a record $221 billion of total client cash last quarter, pushing the world's largest money manager to an all-time high of $11.5 trillion of assets, as it seeks to become a one-stop shop for stocks, bonds, and increasingly private assets. With the S&P 500 financial services stocks adding 1.95%, the S&P 500 banks index added 4.2% during the session. It hit its highest level since February 2022, and the KBW regional bank index closed up 3.4%. Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, and Citigroup will report earnings next week. The US reporting season will gather momentum over the next 2 or 3 weeks amid general optimism, but concerns persist that stock prices have risen too fast and that the labor market is weakening fast, and investors on alert for geopolitical and US presidential election shocks. So these highs may not be sustainable. During the session, the Consumer Discretionary Index was under pressure from an 8.8% slump in shares in Tesla after the EV maker unveiled two of its next major products, Cybercab and Optimus. While Elon Musk showed off prototypes on Thursday, he didn't provide details of how fast it would ramp up production or deal with potential regulatory hurdles. By contrast, Uber stock rose 10% after Tesla's much-anticipated robotaxi event failed to impress investors, with Jefferies saying Tesla's toothless taxi is a best-case outcome for Uber. For the day, the Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 0.97% to 42,863. The S&P 500 gained 0.61% to 5,815. And the Nasdaq Composite gained 0.33% to 18,341. For the week, the S&P 500 added 1.1%, the Dow climbed 1.2%, and the Nasdaq added 1.1%, with all three notching their fifth weekly gain in a row, and the Dow clinching its best winning streak in 8 months. Earlier in the day, data from the US Department of Labor showed that the Producer Price Index, the PPI, for final demand, was unchanged on a monthly basis in September compared to a 0.1% rise expected by economists. Services costs moved up 0.2% following growth of 0.4% in August, driven by a 3% jump in the index for deposit services. Meanwhile, the index for final demand goods dipped by 0.2%. Year on year, the index increased by 1.8%, slower than upwardly revised mark of 1.9% in August, potentially pointing to a cooling inflationary picture, perhaps lessening the impact of the consumer inflation data released earlier in the week, which read stronger than expected, although weekly jobless claims rose more than expected. Meanwhile, consumer sentiment also slipped in October amid lingering frustration over higher prices, as a preliminary reading from the University of Michigan showed. It stood at 68.9, compared with analyst estimates of 70.8. In a review of what's driving growth, Fed economists said it's spending by middle and high income households. As at August 2024, real average spending by low income households was up 7.9% relative to January 2018, but real average spending by middle income households is up by 13.3%, and real average spending by high income households is up a massive 16.7%. Once again, highlighting the unequal nature of household finance across different cohorts. The volatility index was down 1.92% to 20.46, and the US dollar index futures was down 0.06% to 102.92. It appears the US dollar could be entering a new phase of wait and see, which would leave the DXY caught in a range. At present, outside influences and developments could impact the longer-term trajectory of the US dollar and, I suppose, of the Fed path too. The benchmark 10-year US Treasury yield reached a 2.5-month high of 4.12% on Thursday, tempering earnings expectations for large-cap growth stocks. The 2-year, a proxy for the cash rate, also rose. In Canada, stocks at the close in Toronto were up 0.7% to hit a new all-time high, and the VIX in Canada, which measures the implied volatility of the S&P/TSX composite options, was down 1.54% to 10.21. Gold futures for December delivery was up 1.25% to $2,673.90 a troy ounce. While the Fed is expected to cut rates at a slower pace, lower rates still bodes well for gold and other non-yielding assets, given that they reduce their opportunity costs. Elsewhere in commodities trading, oil eased in choppy trading as traders booked profits and unwound some positions ahead of Israel's expected retaliation against Iran and the rollout of fresh economic stimulus in China. Crude oil for delivery in November fell 0.15% to hit $75.50 a barrel, while the December Brent oil contract fell 0.33% to $78.88. Investors are assessing the impact of US hurricane damage as well as those tensions in the Middle East. European stock markets traded marginally higher on Friday as investors digested lackluster British growth data. The UK FTSE rose 0.19% to close at 8,253, as data showed that Britain's economic output rose by 0.2% in monthly terms in August, in line with expectations, and after no growth in the previous 2 months. The ONS said data for September would need to show a month-on-month fall of 0.3% to 0.6% to generate a flat quarterly reading, assuming no revisions to existing figures. Compared to a year ago, economic output was 1% higher, below the 1.4% growth forecast by economists. The data lends some support to our view that a mild slowdown in GDP growth in the second half of this year is more likely than another recession, said analysts at Carroll Economics in a note. The pound US dollar was unchanged at 1.3066. Benchmark copper futures on the London Metal Exchange rose 0.9% to $9,722 a tonne, while December copper futures rose 1.3% to 4.4652 a pound. Copper's rally came after the red metal clocked steep losses earlier this week, following underwhelming signals on stimulus from top importer China. In the Eurozone, German consumer inflation eased to 1.8% in September, the Federal Statistics Office said on Friday, confirming preliminary data. With inflation in the Eurozone's largest economy now running below the European Central Bank's target and growth stagnating, the ECB is widely expected to ease policy once more next week, having already cut rates twice this year. While arguments against a rate cut shouldn't be entirely dismissed, it would now take quite a lot of courage from the ECB to hold, given markets and the consensus are fully aligned for a 25 basis point reduction, analysts at ING said. China is a major export market for a number of Europe's major companies, and its economy has been struggling in the face of sluggish consumer spending and a real estate crisis, of course. The euro-US dollar traded flat at 1.0937. German stocks were higher, and at the close in Frankfurt, the DAX rose 0.85%. The best performer was Airbus Group, which rose 3.93%, while the worst performer was Bayer, which fell 1.89%. The DAX volatility index was down 3.31% to 1764. At the close in Paris, the CAC 40 gained 0.48%. The best performer again was Airbus Group, which rose 3.92%. The worst performer was Carrefour, which fell 2.94%, while shares in Stellantis fell to 52-week lows, falling 2.79%. Most Asian stocks drifted lower on Friday, with Chinese markets sinking in anticipation of more cues on financial stimulus, while South Korean shares rose after the Bank of Korea cut interest rates. China's highly anticipated announcement of financial stimulus plans on Saturday was big on intent, but low on the measurable details that investors need to ratify their recent return to the world's second biggest stock market. News conference by Finance Minister Lan Foan reiterated Beijing's broad plans to revive the ailing economy, with promises made on significant increases to government debt and support for consumers and the property sector. Local governments will be allowed to use special bonds to buy unsold homes without giving an amount. Lan hinted at room for issuing more sovereign bonds and vowed to relieve the debt burden of local governments, signaling a possible rare revision to the budget that could come in the next few weeks. The central government still has quite large room to borrow and increase the deficit, Lan said, without providing a time frame. The strength of the announced fiscal stimulus plan is actually weaker than expected. There's no timetable, no amount, no details of how the money will be spent, said Hyun Yan, investment manager at private fund company Shanghai Kuyang Capital Co. in Shanghai. In the 3 weeks since the People's Bank of China kicked off China's most aggressive stimulus measures since the pandemic, the CSI 300 index has broken records for daily moves and was up 16% overall, but stocks have grown wobbly in recent sessions as initial enthusiasm gave way to concerns about whether the policy support would be big enough to relieve growth. Jason Bedford, former China analyst with Bridgewater and UBS, pointed to Lan's pledge to recapitalize big state banks as indicating authorities expect to see a revival in demand for credit. But the only way the economy needs more credit is if you can create credit demand, which can only be done if you provide fiscal support, he said. Investors have good reason to be circumspect about how much Beijing will spend. The slumping consumer confidence in the property sector is a byproduct of the years-long drive by the Communist Party leadership to reduce debt and root out corruption. Global commodity markets, from iron ore to other industrial metals and oil, have also been volatile on hopes that stimulus would stoke its sluggish demand. Broader metal prices were also buoyed by weakness in the US dollar, which fell from two-month highs as traders maintained bets that the Federal Reserve will still cut interest rates in the coming months, albeit at a slower pace. we have a perfect storm of four factors in play: pent-up household savings and the lack of attractive alternative stock market and the alignment of corporate and shareholder interest driving up buybacks and dividends and central bank programs offering leverage to corporates and institutions to invest in the stock market. A sustained rally driven by the China household as the foundation for success, but we're really in this process and the risks is the possibility of flawed execution and not communicating things well. In fact, China's economy is still growing fairly fast, somewhere around an annualized rate of 4.8%. And China's economic problems lie beneath the headline number. The drivers of growth are extremely imbalanced. Real fixed investment has been rising at double-digit rates. There is no end in sight to the rapid ongoing expansion of industrial capacity. Meanwhile, retail spending has all but stalled. Global demand is soaking up excess production that domestic spending can't absorb. Exports contributed 2% points to China's growth in the first half of the year. Now, on Friday, the CSI 300 was down 2.77% on the day and 3.25% on the week, while the Shanghai Composite was down 2.55% on the day and 3.56% on the week. The yuan was at 7.0668 against the US dollar. Hong Kong markets were closed for a holiday, but the Hang Seng was down 3.25% for the week. South Korea's KOSPI added 0.3% with local stocks buoyed as the BOK cut rates by 25 basis points to 3.25% and signaled a shift away from its restrictive stance as local economic growth cooled and inflation fell. The cut was the BOK's first rate cut in more than 4 years and came as the central bank now sought to shore up slowing growth. A cooling housing market also means that looser monetary conditions will be needed. On the Nikkei, the Japan stocks were higher. It rose 0.42%, although the Topics was off 0.24%. The best performer was fast retailing, which rose 6.09%, while the worst performers, Mitsubishi Estate Co., which fell 2.84%. The Nikkei Volatility Index was down 4.35%, and the US dollar Japan was up 0.19% to 149.15. Japan's improved economic conditions and receding US recession worries are likely to bring prospects of a December or January interest rate hike back into view, even as a new government complicates the politics around monetary policy. A significant dovish shift in rhetoric from the Bank of Japan governor and surprising opposition to further rate hikes by the new prime minister have cast doubts over when the central bank would next tighten policy. Despite the recent change in mood around policy, there is a growing economic case for the central bank to take Japan's rates further away from their historic lows and for the Bank of Japan to step up its hawkish signalling. While the Bank of Japan is expected to keep interest rates steady at its October 30-31 meeting, it will roughly maintain its forecast for inflation to stay around its 2% target through to March 2027. The Bank of Japan ended negative interest rates in March and raised short-term borrowing costs to 0.25% in July, taking a landmark shift away from the decade-long radical monetary stimulus of the previous governor. While slowing US and Chinese demand clouds the outlook, the headwinds have yet to hit manufacturers, with a quarterly central bank survey showing that the business mood is holding up well and companies are retaining robust spending plans. The Bank of Japan's quarterly output report, due after its October meeting, will offer clues on how worried the bank remains about markets and overseas risks. Japan's new economy minister on Tuesday backed the Bank of Japan's rate decision, brushing aside views the new administration would push back against efforts to normalize monetary policy. The Japanese Prime Minister said on Saturday that he would not intervene in monetary policy affairs as the central bank is mandated to achieve price stability. The surprisingly blunt remarks pushed the yen lower against the dollar and cast fresh doubts over how aggressive the Bank of Japan would be in raising rates. Elsewhere, India's Nifty 50 index drifted down 0.14% on Friday from recent record highs. The Australian share market edged low on Friday as traders awaited further signs of directions in the global economy after evidence of weakness once again reared its head in the US. The benchmark ASX 200 slipped 0.1% or 8.5 points, to 8,214 at the closing bell. The index finished 0.8% higher over the five sessions. The index has now gained in four of the previous 5 weeks. The muted performance followed similar moves on Wall Street overnight on Thursday. On the ASX, iron ore miners weakened ahead of China's Saturday announcement. BHP dropped 1.1% to $43.43, and Fortescue Metals declined 1.3% to $19.47. Meanwhile, gold miners were on the rise, with Regis Resources, Capricorn Metals, and Genesis Minerals all climbing, closing at $2.16, $5.91, and $2.07 respectively. They were among the best performing on the exchange. Traders overnight ran to gold following the US CPI and jobs figures, pushing the price for the safe haven asset up around 1% to around $2,633 an ounce. Hotel software provider SiteMinder was the best performing stock on the index, adding 5.3% to $6.74 after the stock was upgraded from overweight to buy by analysts at Jarden. Over the week, Arcadia Lithium was the best performing ASX stock, rallying by more than 90% to $8.18 after Rio Tinto confirmed a $9.9 billion bid for the struggling lithium miner earlier in the week. The banks were mixed, with ANZ up slightly, along with Macquarie, but CBA, NAB and Westpac were all down. Bond rates continued higher, with the 2-year at 3.888% and the 10-year at 4.303%. And the Aussie was at 67.5 cents to the US dollar and 51.66 against the UK pence. In crypto, the price of major cryptocurrency Bitcoin is once again the main attraction, as it always is, to be honest. New day, new reason? Well, this time it was the fact that the price has made its way back above the critical $60,000 level. It had dropped back to as low as 58,946, but buyers showed their hand, and over the next 12 hours or so, it rose again. It's now at 63,022, as I write. Without getting too philosophical, the only thing that matters is where Bitcoin goes next. There are really only three options: a march towards the dynamic resistance level, currently at around 65,000, a further drop below 60,000, or a prolonged sideways chop that will eventually lead to the first of those two options. Now, it's worth noting that American multinational investment giant BlackRock has, according to its Bitcoin ETF product page, 369,640 Bitcoins in custody as it continues to buy the dip. With its total portfolio, the firm is one of the largest corporate holders of Bitcoin and might increase its bets now that it has more capital reserves. As a regulated investment outfit, though, BlackRock is combining a conservative approach with new tech adoption. As such, its current capital base might encourage it to take more calculated risks in the coin moving forward. But that said, firms like Vanguard have specifically issued a highly publicized disclaimer that it will not get involved with Bitcoin or even crypto in general. And that, I think, highlights the really chaotic situation that we have. Reasons to be positive or reasons to be negative. I think all we can say for sure is more volatility ahead as October ticks by. And to me, the US election, issues as to where the bond markets are going, will be things to watch closely over the next little while. And certainly, whilst the markets have hit more highs recently, they may not stay there. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.